Welcome to the audio version of the roundtable for September 19th. I figured little Elvis today, Burning Love, was probably appropriate for all those guys who had radios, phones, pagers, solar panels, and everything else blowing up. I thought that was appropriate for today, especially given the fact that, anyway, been a hell of a couple of days. We have a ton of things to talk about. Got a full quorum tonight. So let me bring everybody on. Got a new member, Danger Doug, Navy Chief.
Discussion.
Gives me a ration of shit every chance he can, which is appropriate for military guys to have a little bit of, inter-service rivalry, if I can talk tonight. Let's see who else we got going today. We got Colonel Johnson, Colonel Piper, Colonel Conrad, Spud Hut, and Troop. So, gents, thanks for jumping on the round table tonight. And I want to start and talk two main things related to the pager attack. And one of those, in any order you want to take them, the first question is, how do you think this is going to affect the landscape here in the U.S.? Number one, from both government using this attack and potentially adversaries using this attack. Secondly, how soon do you think we'll see it on our shores? That's the real question of the day. So anybody can start. I'll just put it out there, and you guys can choose who's going to start.
I think I said quite a bit last night on this subject, so I'll wait till everybody else has a turn.
All right, I'll jump in. Hey, I was just going to say, I think it's going to be a while before it would have any significant impact on our situation. I think there's some technical aspects of this that would have to be coordinated well in advance and specifically targeted. So I think it's of limited concern at the moment, but it could be of potentially great concern down the road.
Yes, you know, one of the things I would say, Colonel, is when we look at the methods of what they did, how they did it, or what's been released on how they did it. Now, I'm not sure so much what's being given out to the public is actual truth. I think there was different methods that were used. This is just more like obfuscation on the actual method that was used. I think if we actually look at mobile technology, for example, most of it was used for to understand where someone's at, right? To be able to track them, understand their behaviors, or basically their pattern of life. Now this was used in a kinetic manner, so I think this basically changed the game, and everybody took notice. And when I say everybody, I'm talking about all the powers that be. Within every government. So if we look at this, everybody's saying, okay, now we're taking it up to the next level. This is the next stage in going after people. So I think this is kind of a key thing. All governments have taken notice that, okay, this technology hasn't just, the Israelis weren't the only one that had this type of technology or the ability to try to do something like this in a kinetic fashion. So I think this is probably a game changer. And what we start seeing in the future is going to be, it's going to get really interesting.
Raul, Colonel Johnson, Spud, you guys got a thought on this?
Well, my thought, I kind of said it last night. I thought the point that Scout made about, directed energy, possibly 5G energy being able to cause the battery packs to become more unstable and explode, like maybe changing the nature of the capability of an exploding backpack battery from overheating to exploding. I thought that was a pretty interesting idea to consider. And my personal thing is, I think, who was talking about this, like a 0-point type of attack. No one's ever seen this before. It's a brand new thing. So I would expect those that have this capability to exploit the capability to the maximum right now. I mean, why would they wait? If they wait, more people are going to come up with countermeasures and do things to mitigate it. So, you know, I was just listening to Cliff Eye's podcast where his models are all showing massive things happening in the next 45 days going on for like 6 months. And it just, like we were talking about with the Night of the Long Knives, you know, I think the deep state cabal, whatever you want to call them, they're at a critical juncture where they're either going to get overwhelmed by the populace here and it's just a matter of time, or they're going to do something to consolidate their power rapidly, because otherwise they're in trouble. So I personally feel like it would be any time between now and the inauguration is, you know, their game.
Ralph,
I think one of the, hey, good to be back on American soil. I want to bring out something that I think this needs to be brought up to everybody. And that is, we've talked a lot, and I've talked to a lot of groups here where I live about going back to the old way of doing comms and runners and codes and all of that. And this just tells me more that that's where we need to go. Our dependency on these stupid little phones that we carry around with us, these little computers that tell the world where the hell we are and what we're doing. We've got to start leaving them at home. We got to start taking the batteries out. We got to start doing a lot more protective measures in a lot of different ways. We got to go back to the old CEOI code lists. There's a lot of things that I think we need to go backwards technology-wise. And we can disappear that way. We can vanish, fall off the radar. We got to turn off our Wi-Fi. I watched that one video where they showed that the Wi-Fi radio signals can be transmitted and picked up so that you know where the moving objects in the house are. So all of these together tell us that we need to start going back to what we were taught a long time ago, the simplicity of what you need to do operations wise for survival, because they're gonna send out their happy little killer drones on all the targets that they're going to want to go after. Over.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Kunstler was saying the exact same thing, talking to Mike Ferris the other day. He said, basically, you know, if they create this panopticon, the only way to do it is pull the plug. The only way to stop the panopticon of, you know, amazing technology is just to kill power.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, I don't want to get us in trouble, but, you know, we all probably live next to a tower that probably needs a disconnect button.
I would say, I agree to a certain extent. To another extent, you know, sometimes a reset is appropriate. And I think we're in the zone where a reset is more than appropriate, if that makes any sense. And I think the reset's going to happen organically. I don't think it's going to happen. What's the best way to say it? It's going to happen regardless of what the elite want. And, you know, I've said this before. I think that they're going to try and consolidate power within the next 45 days. However they do that is going to fail. And as it fails, so too will a lot of the other control systems, right? Because they're rolling out the control grid across the planet. I mean, you guys are all in the chat. You saw Michael Yan put in there that basically Singapore is outdoor prison now, because they've got drones patrolling. Everything's QR code. It's a full-on giga city now. So I can see I can see a lot of different things going on, but I also see that the system will ultimately fail in on itself just because of the fact that, and like I said, every 80 years we go through this where, you know, some dipshit wants to take control of the planet and we end up fighting a war over it. So far, the war hasn't started. And I think part of that is because the powers that be have realized that that's not in the best interest of most countries outside of the US and the UK. And so you're seeing this struggle between these loose affiliations and loose, these loose coalitions, and it's just not working out for them. So I see this, you know, I see the attack vector coming here at some point. I don't think right away. And I don't think it'll be one of our enemies that does it. I think it'll be a desperation thing that the elite pull on key leadership that's opposing them. Or at least that's the way I think it'll develop.
Well, let me ask you this. So when they took over England with Cromwell, when they took over France, when they took over Spain, when they took over Germany, when they took over Russia, they already had control through debauchery and bribery and all kinds of other things of the leadership. Our leadership is corrupt as all hell. So when you look at the indicators historically, all those major events in history that allowed them to destroy a country and then buy it all while it was all pennies on the dollar, and, you know, make millions off of the death of millions. I don't see a difference. I see the exact same playbook being played out now. The real question is how will Americans react to this? Will they wake up enough to counter it? And I don't see that. I really don't see that. Over.
I'm having a hard time believing that I'm the only optimist in the room right now. That's quite amazing. Usually I'm the most bitter in the room.
It's so true. You are. Yeah. I agree. I think it caught us all a little short. That's why the silence.
You're probably right about that. But The other thing I want to talk to you today too is that we should make this transition. Is the censorship that's inevitably going to hit Twitter because they're censoring TikTok. They want to censor Telegram, and so far Telegram and Twitter are open platforms. And I think within the next 2 months. Definitely before the election, they're going to make some kind of a play, or at least before that. But, you know, the question is, where do you go after that when they take down those platforms? Where's the population go to stay connected, or at least to get some kind of information?
That's when we go to like AGF radios and start, you know, relaying situation reports around the country.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, one of the things that kind of falls into that, Colonel, is if you look at Twitter right now, or X, whatever you want to call it, on the platform itself, like I've noticed myself, like I'll go to bed, I wake up in the morning, and on the platform itself, there's a lot of bots. So I'll start having like these weird people following me that are following like 800 or 1,000 people. And they got like three people following them, and they're all bots. And so the platform itself right now, I feel is under attack. They're not going to really announce that right now unless it gets that bad. I also think that, you know, you guys are talking about the HF, but the big thing with HF to go for information, one of the issues with that is you have to be talking to people in your neighborhood and saying, hey, this is what we're hearing right now over, hey, we've got a radio network set up. This is what we're doing. you know, so people get information. But then you're always going to have those people who live in your neighborhood. They're the doubters. They're the ones who did not vote for whoever, whatever candidate, and they're going to be in denial. So there's going to be a lot of factors that are going to start playing into this, especially at the local level. And that's where it comes into having a strong network where people can try to influence in a positive way. Like, hey, this is what's going on. You guys need to listen, because a lot of people, there's going to be a lot of fear. If everything goes down, there's so many people right now that are so fed into the social media network that if it goes down, they don't know what to do. If they don't get a text, if they're not able to get on their Instagram and actually follow the people that they're used to, it's kind of like a mind virus where there's going to be this withdrawal and people are going to have a really hard time understanding what's going on, especially if the grid goes down.
Well, there's that.
Chief, I think that's one reason why over the weeks that we've been talking together, one of the big things we've been trying to tell people is build your network so that when it does go down, you know, you reach out to each other. You don't allow yourself to drop into that black hole of, oh shit, what do I do now? I can't get on Facebook. Good God, my life's going to end. And if we build those networks now and we have people we can talk to now, when it goes bad, that network's going to power up.
I think if there's any kind of event that's bad, I mean, whether you got a network or not, you start putting out all the information, you know, that you know is reasonable to everyone you can, you know, going through your neighborhood, rallying people together. Because people are going to be looking for information and trying to figure out what's going on.
There's always landlines, right?
No, that's Chip. That's Chip. He's still in the air. You need to introduce him. tell him he's got to get on the ground first.
Yeah. So Chip's a new member. Warrant officer, right? Warrant officer pilot.
Yes, sir.
And spent way too much time in the Army. Is probably as bitter or close to being as bitter as I am, mainly about current events. I don't know how you are about the Army, but you want to chime in on any of this?
Yeah, I'll give anybody a cynicism contest if they're up for it. So I've heard numerous people talk on this platform or on the show about building your network, and that's extremely important. But one of the thoughts I had was, if you can't build a network with some of the people that are around you, at least get to know who they are. It might give you a little bit of insight of how they might behave when this whole thing goes in the tank, if that happens. A lot of people are going to be looking for direction in leadership, and you're going to, if you're the guy or if you're helping lead, you're going to want to be able to identify other people that can that help out. And just getting to know them, might not be able to bring them into your network, but just get to know the people. Like if you live in a regular neighborhood, just get to know them all and who they are. And you might be able to prioritize who you can count on.
I would say that goes right into sphere of influence, line of sight, right? Build a trusted network of people that you can count on when things go sideways. And I think things are going to go sideways very soon. And I think what's interesting about the current situation is I'm seeing people that normally don't say anything, literally saying something's coming, something's on the horizon. They can feel it. And, now more than any other time, I think in our history, I think we're going to see things that we've never seen in our lifetimes. And I was listening to Cliff High before this, listening to his thing about, and Bruce, I'll let you talk through some of that. talking about his data sets. And what's very telling about what he's talking about, what Martin Armstrong's talking about, what Tom Luongo's talking about, and a host of others, even Alex Granderson, same thing, that humanity is not prepared for what's ahead. And that tells me that everybody sees some kind of an event that's completely unexpected. And I firmly believe that that's on the horizon for a variety of reasons. But the biggest one is I'm watching what's happening and what's coming out of the national establishment. And everything coming out of the national level is incoherent. Right down to the messaging is incoherent. And I don't think that's by design. I think that's because there's an internal feud going on right now across the spectrum because they can't get control of the cultural narrative. And there was a, Ian Carroll was on, if you don't know who Ian Carroll is, he's on primarily on Twitter now. He started out on TikTok and he's deep dived into all the conspiracy theory and tin hat stuff. And right now he's talking about Diddy stuff. But what he's deep dive into, which I think is really interesting, is he's deep dived into the relationships between Diddy, the relationships outside of Hollywood and the music industry. And he's making the correlation, which I've done several times on the show, but he's doing it with facts and real information that the Epstein stuff stopped because Epstein was killed before they could start to disclose the information. And with Diddy in jail, everybody in around him that's been harmed by him is coming out of the woodwork now. And they can't control that narrative, just like they can't control the situation with the narrative that's coming out of both Israel and the narrative that's coming out of Ukraine. They can control the information, but they can't control the social narrative. And what's interesting is that as this story develops, which, by the way, I don't really care about the whole Diddy thing, but I do care about the fact that if this disclosure leads to more and a wider set of information about the intelligence agency's role with Epstein, and if Diddy was in the same organization, or at least controlled by the same people, that will have massive ramifications on not just the state, but on all of the state actors at the national level. And that to me is why they're panicking. I don't think it's because of the roll up of Diddy. I think it's because they're afraid of what people around him are going to start saying, because they shut down Epstein within days of him being arrested. They shut down all, who was on the island, who was on the manifest, who was associated with them, where his residences were, how many people visited the island. I mean, they shut all that down. A bunch of high-powered lawyers went down to Miami and shut that down. And they're not doing that in this case. And that's the interesting side of that. And when Ian Carroll was talking about it today, and where I'm going with all this is, I think all of their push right now for censorship is because they know those disclosures are coming. And I've been talking about that for over a year now, and I'm finally starting to see the disclosures that I expected starting to hit the mainstream. And one thing that Ian Carroll said that I agree with is the power of alternative media is literally that it forces the mainstream to acknowledge it, and it forces them to report on it as it gains traction. And, some of these videos that have been posted just in the last few days about these attacks in Lebanon, 83 million views in 24 hours. That's unheard of. And that to me is part of what's driving this incoherent messaging, because they don't know what to do to counter it and to get the cultural narrative back. And I think that's what's driving a lot of what we're seeing. And I think that's the reason why when things fall apart, it's going to be because there's infighting across the entire elite. At least I'm starting to see that. I don't know. Maybe you guys aren't seeing the same thing, but that's what I'm seeing right now. And that's why I think we're headed towards something major, because they're going to have to pull out all the stops to maintain power.
What I'm seeing with alternative media, just the guys that I communicate with, what we talk about, what we've looked at, is in including myself, I just don't watch any mainstream channel anymore. I used to watch Fox just about every night. I might watch one or two shows on or off. I might record DVR a couple. I don't have time for that garbage anymore. The way I look at it is they're giving you some of the truth. They're giving you maybe 90% of the truth, but it's not the whole truth. And when it's not the whole truth, I just don't have time for that garbage. And a lot of the guys that I'm talking to, they don't have time for that garbage either. And there's just been a massive shift over to alternative media. And it's like you're saying, sir, they don't have a control of that right now. They don't have a grip on it.
You know, Colonel, one of the things I would say, and you know, like Chip's saying, you know, the control, and it's going to the alternative media. You know, I'm in the same boat as Chip. You know, I used to, years ago, you know, I'd have Fox News on, maybe watch a little bit of it every night. I haven't watched any mainstream news in probably like 6 years. And, you know, you were, to allude what you were saying earlier about the shift where there's this power struggle. You know, if you look at, if we go back to World War One, for example, right? And the reason I'm going here is you basically had all these different monarchies. And at the end of World War One, basically Britain itself, the crown in England, was the only substantial crown standing. The Tsar of Russia was gone. Like, and that was a family member. They intentionally like let them get lynched, right? And killed the whole family. So basically what we have now is, it's the same thing, but it's more open, and it's in a different environment because you have social media and you have all these different things. But right now we're watching a major power struggle within the world, because now it is more of a global world. Back then, China wasn't the power it is now. So we're seeing this massive try to, there's a consolidation of power, and they're trying to get to that globalist one world order. And that is one of the biggest issues we're seeing right now, is there is a major power play to who's going to be shaken out at the top, kind of like what we had at the end of World War One with Britain going into World War II.
That kind of leads into people talking about blue helmets and when are they going to show up and what would be the impetus for that. We've kind of skipped over the how these small form devices would be exploited and when they would be exploited. But I think probably everybody on this round table sees the same thing as far as some type of significant unrest happening within the United States, whether the catalyst for that is terrorism or whether it is, you know, our own government falling apart. There's going to be factions that are going to evolve from that. There's going to be factions in society that start to culminate, coagulate, and then go after each other. And then you're going to have that impetus for the blue helmets to show up with the P2P or the responsibility to protect doctrine that the UN has declared, like Bosnia Herzegovina, for example. There was a massacre that had happened in Bosnia, and early, I think in 2005, the UN entered into Bosnia, but they weren't equipped and they weren't capable of really protecting or preventing the atrocities that happened there. And after we came out of that, the Kofi Annan, the leader of the UN, if you will, started this duty to protect option that basically says if there's unrest in a country and the country's government is unable to get a handle on it, or they're allowing persecution of any group, which is a very nebulous kind of term, then the UN states have the authorization to enter into that country against that country's will, or you know, whether they authorize it or not. and then establish a force of presence so that they could control whatever this perceived unrest or persecution is. So in effect, the UN could say Americans are targeting Haitians, or Americans are targeting these stateless immigrants that are coming to the United States, or Americans are doing whatever. And so you define a bad guy. Who's the bad guy? Is it domestic right-wing extremists? Is it Christians? Is it whatever? And you can do that because of the secular violence that's happened, everywhere else in the world. You can certainly define a group of Christians or anybody you want as your target group, your enemy, and then go after them. And the reason that's important is because we've talked about what would happen if I see a blue helmet on the street corner. Well, if you're part of that targeted group and everybody around you doesn't want to be part of that targeted group, and the penetration or the deployment of the blue helmets basically comes in the form of their landing in international airports, they're culminating at National Guard stations, they're getting equipped in your local communities, and then all of a sudden they don the blue helmet when they're sitting on an M113 behind a 50 cal, and you didn't even notice it when you came home from work, and now you look out your window and there's a a military presence or a tactical presence up the street from you. I want people to kind of get a clue that it's not going to be a Red Dawn scenario where these dudes are just jumping out of the sky. We're going to invite them into the country. We are going to equip them once they're in the country, and then we're going to deploy them. We, meaning the compromised United States government, calling out for help.
We've already armed them. Yeah, that's already
happened. So the thing is now they're deployed, right? And the other thing with the phones, this is where the phones become really kind of an important thing, because the government already uses SDR cell towers, the eNode Bs that they set up to basically mimic cell towers. They already know how to track your phone. They already know how to identify you. They already know what your social media is. They already know where to pin it geographically. They already know how, even this social media conversation that we're having right now, we have a group of an association, of these thought leaders or these thinkers that have a public or a community that we're influencing based on our user account, based on how many times this is forwarded or shared or viewed. And then who are the significant people that might consume this information? And you just build this, basically a fishbone diagram of inputs and outputs. And you go, okay, well, this guy, nobody listens to him. That trooper guy, nobody gives a shit about water. But we get these people over here. Let's focus on them. And then who consumes their information in their own node? So these fabrics of associations that, we're still talking about how we can have a span of control to influence our network and build it out. The federal fucking government's already built out our network. They already know all the nodes, all the connections, all the hubs, all the end users, all the active participants, all the primary influencers, all the methods of communication. And so that's mapped out. So if don't throw your phone out the window. It's not really going to fucking matter at this point if you're trying to conceal everything that you've already given them in your digital popcorn trail to build a very comprehensive granular map of what their target of concern is going to be. The point is that the UN blue helmet guys, they are not going to be showing up at the railhead unloading their equipment. They're just literally going to appear like a street light turning from red to green, embedded into communities. Now, where they concentrate them, what equipment they have, what their specific mission is, all that other stuff, it may or may not matter. But I guarantee you that on the front end of it, they are going to have what I would equate to extrajudicial killing, where they're going to go, these fuckers that live in these zip codes are the ones that are probably going to rabble rouse and get these other fuckers together to present a threat. So let's just preemptively take those guys out first. And then all their followers are going to go, oh my God, Steve Murray and Trooper, they got taken offline in a very public way on the news. And then they killed Matt Bracken and they killed, everybody else that we care about. So that's what they're going to do. They're going to work their way down. And we're not at like Tucker Carlson level, obviously, but Tucker Carlson also doesn't have the ability to locally lead or influence any zip code level community like everybody on this this conversation does. So I just wanted to make sure that we're drawing a correlation between what most people think of when they go, my cell phone is surveilling me at the NSA somewhere, versus there is a real time e-node that is tracking my phone and where I'm at, and there are armed guys that are just appeared up the street in a, you know, in a Humvee, and they're going to come get me because they're worried about civil unrest and the UN with their perceived monopoly on violence, or their duty to protect countries has been given authorization to come in here outside the authority of any sheriff or local law enforcement and do whatever they feel is necessary from a UN perspective to enforce order and establish control. So all these things are connected. And when that happens, you're going to have a little shock on the front end of it. And then whoever the surviving members of the community are going to go, holy fuck, dude, there's actually blue helmets in the cities and they're taking motherfuckers out. So at that point, then, you know, you go full send, you go after their communication networks, you make their ability to control intersections and enforce their will way too expensive and hazardous to their health. And, you know, at that point is game on. But what I'm saying is that we're not going to know the game started until all their pieces are already on the chessboard.
I want to jump in for a second. Troop, I normally agree with you, but I don't really see that scenario unfolding very readily. First of all, as far as cell phones are concerned and shutting them off or blowing them up or anything else like that, they are a built-in surveillance system that is enormously valuable in terms of intelligence gathering.
Oh, I'm not saying they're going to blow up our cell phones. Not at all.
I'm just saying they're going to think long and hard before they disable some of these things because it's their best option at getting down to a granular level on gathering intel on specific individuals. That goes without saying. And so as far as the UN is concerned, historically, UN peacekeeping troops haven't been that effective in a lot of foreign countries, especially in one is anywhere near as well armed as we are. They would be fighting on our turf. They're the away team. I think the art of Molotov cocktails would come into play very, very quickly. I think there would be a lot of dedicated people, women. I know women who are, you know, FBI sniper training will tell you women are more politically convicted than men. So you got to take them out first. And I could see tons of women walking up smiley, and as a distraction or delivering ordnance or something else and leaving the area, you know, unsuspected. I just don't see the UN working that effectively within our borders. I really don't. That's not to say we wouldn't see something ginned up with our own military and police units trying to be turned against us. But what I'm really looking at coming down the road here is one of two options. The first option with this election is if they determine that things are close enough that they can try and fake it and get away with it. If they can do that, that's what they're going to do and play things out and see how it goes. Then they'll handle civil unrest as brush fires pop up. If they can't do that without major risk of civil war and response, then I think what you're going to see is something that most people aren't talking about. And that's something I mentioned before. That's a down ballot vote. I would see them trying to flood Congress with Democrats in both houses, and then in fairly short order, charges would be drawn up against Trump with lawfare, this time coming from our own Congress, and then you would have them proceed to both impeach and then follow on with conviction in the Senate. And I think that the people. I'm sorry, I got distracted for a second. I think, I beg your pardon. I got distracted. My wife gave it to us something for a second. Anyhow, if Trump does make it in because they think that it's going to be too tumultuous to keep him out, I think they'll just go after him in different ways. And I think the last resort would be with a sniper. They're going to keep playing this game with low-level idiots. Just for deniability and such. But I really see Trump needing to have an effective plan to take out all the corrupt individuals in our Congress before they can act against him.
Dave, could I say something?
Yeah.
I just, one thing I was thinking, Will Troop was talking about, and I think we're all circling around kind of some of the same ideas, but like a key thing, a key question I think we have to consider is the scope and scale of what we might see. Part of me, you know, a lot of me thinks that they need something that's going to be at least 10 times the impact of 9/11 if they're going to achieve the level of buy-in that they got during 9/11. And that's my most likely scenario. Now, I agree that there's lots of possibilities for them to steal the election that we still talk about, to do all the things you just mentioned, Dave. And, you know, the question I think, like, I'm thinking about what Steve Murray said here earlier about the growing discontinuity of information coming out of DC and how they're being inconsistent, and how also we see the awakening of people, you know, just every day. I mean, like this guy that was on Ian, whatever his name was, that was on InfoWars, the Thrilla Gorilla on Twitter. I mean, his videos are devastating. And so information is coming out more and more quickly. And what I'm seeing is, I'm thinking they're getting desperate, and they're going to have to do something really big, or else they're almost at the point of complete loss of control of the narrative. And that any small, the one problem I see for the cabal, or deep state, whatever you want to call them, going into some kind of copycat of 2020, stealing elections, or 2022, or just doing the lawfare option, is that I think all their shit starts to fall apart for them under that. The only way I see that they can reestablish complete control of the narrative is they're going to have to do something devastating, to the point that everyone in America, I mean, even us, all of us are in some type of shock that we're not able to function, where they can then try to reestablish reality. You know, if they're able to, who knows what the avenue of attack would be, but if they were able to do something devastating enough that they've destroyed all internet communications that aren't under their control, they've could, you know, they basically reestablish their complete control of all communications, that would put all of us in a position where it's kind of like, either, you know, for the average person that's a sheep, it's going to believe what the government says, and they're trying to provide some sort of law and order, maybe with UN assistance, or are you going to believe, you know, Bill Bob down the street who's talking conspiracy theories and like, let's go attack the UN? I think the problem will be in that situation, a lot of people are just going to go, oh, we just want order and peace and, you know, end of the chaos. And I don't know. That's, I know I'm thinking out loud a little bit there, but that's something.
Hey, Bruce, you make excellent points. First of all, we haven't talked about any kind of quote-unquote October surprise, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I'm almost certain they've got one more likely two or three things up their sleeve that they could launch if they need to. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, and look at the podcast that I was going to say that we should have had Bill Boopert on here tonight, because his Storming America series is just fantastic. And I see that as a very high likelihood of possibilities. If they need something to really just disrupt the entire country, that would do it. And for people that aren't familiar with that he discusses kind of a coordinated massed attack that happens over a series of days or a week, that is using all of the foreign invaders that we've had come into the country, whether they're, you know, Chinese, Libyans, Syrians, Iranians, whatever, in coordinated special ops attacks against American infrastructure, schools. And he portrays in his podcast, Chasing Ghosts, a very well done analysis of what that might look at. And it would truly be devastating. I mean, if you look at the numbers of men that we've had come into our country under Biden, they could easily have millions of guys. And, you know, even if it's 100,000 special ops, that could do devastating damage to our country in a matter of a week.
Yeah, but, you know,
I agree. to me, that's the biggest thing that I see here. And if you look at all of the revolutions that have occurred because of the infamous them, they've all been through formations. And I didn't realize this until a week ago. I was given some information on this. And that is, at the beginning of the Russian Revolution, when they wanted to storm troop cities, they brought in Chinese and were told, just kill everybody. And this is the way they operate. They set up these cells. They set up terror organizations. They bring everybody in, and then they turn them loose. And what we've got to do is, we've got, with this knowledge, knowing this is their playbook, we have got to be prepared that when they turn the dogs loose, we're ready to liquidate them. Over.
Yeah, I just had a thought on the shock event. Past shock events have been used to unite the nation or a nation against the defined enemy. And that's what we're talking about, a shock event to gain back the narrative. My cynicism is going to come out here. I don't know that they're going to be able to do that, because you have to have some credibility behind that. And I think they're danger close right now to losing the ability to gain back any sort of credibility.
I would say they've lost it already, and I don't think they're getting it back. I was just thinking through all these scenarios that have been laid out there. I would say, you know, all are plausible. You know, I don't see the Red Dawn event either, but I think there's a lot of plausibility into pretty much every other scenario you guys have talked through. And I would say that, man, there's a lot to unpack here. I'll say that. There's a lot to unpack. And hang on, Dave, just one second. I think the... I guess the best way to say this without belaboring the point is, that's why I think something big is coming that's going to be completely unexpected. Because remember, they're 2 to 3 years ahead of us, sometimes 10 years ahead of us in planning, right? And Dave, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. I think Raul and I have talked about it too, that we're always playing catch up. And they have multiple lines of operation to choose from. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, if you think historically about the United States from a philosophical construct, we have always upheld freedom and liberty above pretty much all else. The British, on the other hand, have upheld security and order. And so they were fine with a class society and so on, where people condescended and took care of their underlings. Whereas we believe that people should be free to live and grow or fail on their own. But you go back to Benjamin Franklin and you think about the founding of our nation and what he warned about, you know, giving up our freedoms for security. And then, of course, we would have neither. I think if you believe that some of the major conspiracy origins suggest that City of London and old British money and those families as such are a driving force, and as far as what goes on with the deep state. So it would be perfectly logical for them to sort of fall back on their old tactics, which is to drive insecurity, drive all kinds of tumultuous situations, and try to get people to buy off on, we just want to get back to how things were. I just want my life to be back how it was.
Yeah, and they want fear.
I'll sacrifice this. I'll sacrifice that. I just don't want my kids going to school and getting shot. And people, they'll try and drive people to make that trade.
Oh, absolutely, they will. That's the whole point of the fear, right? That's the whole point. Let me address something in the chat real quick. So I was going to talk about this later, Viking, but I'll talk about it now. I was already in the process of changing the format of the Wednesday night show for a variety of reasons. One of the biggest reasons is all those guys that do the Wednesday night show, those guys are all training, doing stuff. They're all busy. And so Monday night will be the sit rep. Wednesday night will be a one-on-one. And then Thursday nights will be the audio roundtable. And I decided to keep this format because this crew rotates, on a regular basis. It's really not a standardized crew. Like this is the most we've had on a roundtable in a couple of months. I'll make that change next week. In fact, I'm already going to make that change next week. Stay tuned to stay tuned. Grateful. I didn't play your song today just because there's too much stuff that was going on that, Elvis fit better. So I'll play that on Monday night. So I haven't forgotten about it. Sorry, Dave. I was sorry to steal your thunder, but, wanted to answer that before. It was lost in the comments because the chat goes quick and I don't have time, can't keep up with all of it.
No, you weren't stealing my thunder. I concluded my thought, but I think that people under stress, even institutionally or organizationally or culturally, tend to fall back on things that they know. And that is pretty much what the European model has been, creating disorder, creating chaos. And in providing the solution of order and stability at a price.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, that's always the script, right? Is create the maximum amount of fear, drive people to, emotionally make decisions, which is something they do all the time. And most people will sign up for it because they want the normalcy, want the normalcy bias. So yeah, there's a lot there to unpack. I think we could have this discussion probably 50, 60 more times and not even scratch the surface with all the different scenarios we could walk through. One thing I wanted to touch base and I don't know if we'll talk briefly about this, but I posted something in the chat this morning that one of my admins sent me, that strike that was near Moscow on that ammo dump, the seismic of it indicated some kind of a massive explosion. I guess my question to the group is, how do you think or do you think Russia's going to respond to it, and then how?
I'm getting reports, and I'm not going to say where my sources are. It'll lead people in the wrong direction, and I don't want our uninvited listening audience to go chasing after this. But inside reports are talking about the hypervelocity batteries and brigades being formed up, and they are prioritizing targets. And it includes our National Training Center. It includes a few other places, just to drive home the message that says, oh, we can reach out and touch you. Be careful where you go next.
Okay. Yeah, but if I could make one quick comment, the problem with looking at an intercontinental delivery system is that the United States has a lot of sensor options, and you can tell a lot about a missile, but you can't tell what the actual warhead is. Putin has been the adult in the room and has been very restrained in how he's responded. I would tend to think if Putin is going to make a point, he would use covert forces, A-teams, whatever, on the ground in the United States to take out probably some military targets in an area where there's nobody around, there's not going to be any or very few casualties, and make a loud big boom on one of our military training sites or facilities, but not doing it with a missile, doing it by guerrilla activity, just to make the point safely that they can reach out and touch us. And he's got people all over the place here.
He does have people all over the place, and he could do that. And that would be some very heavy strategic messaging. But I think the long-range hypervelocity missile concept would strike fear into a lot of Americans to put pressure on everybody.
But you don't know.
As opposed to, hey, it just blew up. We think it was, Spetsnaz Team 42.
Yeah, but the second you launch a missile and we start tracking it, even if it is a hypervelocity missile, we don't know what the warhead is. And the question is that a nuke? Is that a nuke? Do we launch? Do we not launch? Go, no go. And I don't think Putin wants to drive that question. I think he would avoid.
So
I heard this.
I don't want to push the security issue too far, but I want you to know that you've made a couple of assumptions that are not true in terms of hypervelocity, and I'll leave it at that.
Here's something I was thinking about this. I there was a different podcast I listened to talking about the situation for Putin, and I think one of the problems he's got, he also has, Martin Armstrong was making this point yesterday, that the problem is Putin has his own neocons to deal with. And any retaliation he does, besides doing the things that you guys brought up about teaching a lesson, he's also got to do something that's visible enough to keep his situation at home stable enough that they don't try to undermine him. Because Martin Armstrong made the point that the neocons in Russia, they very much want to take a much more aggressive, military posture against the U.S.
No, I agree. That's why the brigades were mobilized. That's exactly why.
I'll just jump in on that. Prioritization of targets, obviously, Putin's been restrained but prepared and very slow to act, but decisive when he does. I wouldn't agree that his first order of escalation would be in the United States. But I would say that his second order of escalation would definitely be in the United States. And you could deliver a hypersonic missile to anywhere in the United States before we even arm our nuclear arsenal. So that's a hell of a bet that you're not going to get a retaliatory strike if you strike a target within the U.S. Now, you mentioned NTC. That would be a good target if you think about it, because it's just a bunch of open desert. It's going to have very little material damage to the United States. You're definitely going to have trainees as casualties in that area. But the thing that makes that a really desirable target is, first of all, it makes a statement that you can strike it. Second of all, it's easy to hit because it's literally right off the Pacific Ocean. And third, you could demonstrate at least a small scale of the technology that you could bring to bear if the escalations continued into full open conflict. So I don't see a hypersonic missile, coming out of the upper atmosphere and then hitting somewhere in the middle of Kansas. But I could definitely see an escalation in force. But I don't see that as a primary escalation of force.
Yeah, I'm gonna stay in the zone of I'm not really sure what to expect. I think anything is possible. The attack on the training center where he hit all those officers, that was a very, very loud message to NATO, to your point, Raul. And I think that was retaliatory. And I think they may do something similar. But, what's interesting about the ammo depot was the evacuations that happened immediately. And then you know, the pretty much the blackout, because you would think that they would have, the Russians would have that not responded, but they would have given out some kind of information that the situation was safe, situation wasn't safe. We've heard nothing other than there's these massive fires burning. So I think that whatever was hit there was a very strategic target. And I think that the Russians are still doing BDA on it. Sorry, battle damage assessment on it. And I think that they're going to wait till the dust clears and then they will retaliate. But I think it's going to be in Europe first. I don't think it'll be here right away, but I could be wrong.
But you know, the fucked up part of that is we have members of the audience and we've seen this in the other social media channels where the Americans are literally suggesting, okay, well, you can start with this target. You know, like somebody in the chat just said, if you blow up Portland, that would be a good target to start with. Maybe DC while Congress is in session. Yeah, it's pretty sad that our government has so little credibility that, we're literally like, well, let's have a poll. Where should the Russians strike first in the United States? Like, what would be the most advantageous for them and us? We could forgive Portland. You know, we could move on from there. We could rebuild. I was just kind of chuckling at that in the comments.
Yeah, there's a lot of this to unpack, right? Because the situation has changed drastically. And if I go back to Keir Starmer coming here with carrying a red suitcase, can you have any clearer messaging that you're literally bringing orders for the apparatus here to follow? I mean, I don't think there's a clearer message on the planet for that. So obviously, the City of London is still dictating what we do and how we respond. And I think it's very interesting that not even 3 days after this guy's off the ground, this attack happens. And, you know, it's not a matter of if the Russians respond, it's how they respond and what they respond with, right? I'm staying on the fence of I'm not sure why they would, attack here first, but the Russians have said, Putin has said twice now, that any attack on Russian soil by NATO weapons is considered a NATO attack.
That's correct.
So I think he's been very, very clear about how he views long-range weapons. So I think it's just a matter of time before he responds, but the jury's still out on how he responds. And I think, Rao, you're closer to it than I am. So the stuff that I've been hearing is way different. You know, kinetic stuff against infrastructure, kinetic stuff to take down, you know, specific segments of the country. I don't know which part of that's true.
No, there's a number of NATO targets that have been leaked and a number of U.S. targets that have been leaked.
A thought I had was when we think of false flags, a lot of us think locally. The neocons want him to respond. That's pretty obvious. They want to kick this thing off. They want to erase the debt. They want to get it going. So is it out of the realm of possibilities that we see an attack on our soil or one of our carriers or something, and it's somebody else? We got to remember where these. It could even be at a smaller level with these devices, cell phones or pagers. It could be individuals within our country. And then it could be blamed on Russia. So for me, that's not out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, I think so too. Why I'm stumbling is I'm trying not to trip over the fear mongering that usually goes along with this, because that's usually how it goes. But, and Raul, I was going to ask you, do you think that list being leaked, do you think that's intentional or do you think that's unintentional?
I've been able to figure that one out. The route that it's coming through is pretty damn reliable. What I can't figure out is what the command structure is prepared to do, knowing that there would also be a response. And we haven't been able to crack that nut yet.
Yeah, and I think that's that would be assuming that. So I'm going to make the assumption that that's an intentional leak. And the first, let's for all intents and purposes, let's say the missile thing is on the table right now or inside the U.S. I think Group's right? It's a, choosing a target like NTC is a perfect target for demonstration. And, not a lot of collateral damage, not a lot of damage in total, but it would be a wake-up call for everybody in the country. And I can talk with some authority on space-based detection systems, and I can tell you that there are limitations to space-based detection. It's not as robust as people think it is. It has its limitations, even the new stuff. So nothing's bulletproof. So I can see, something moving that fast being missed, especially by a sensor.
One thing that would really muddy the waters is we had talked several shows about these Gulf containers, these Gulftainer cargo transport systems that you can bring in on a ship. You can have missile systems or drone systems inside the cargo containers, put them on a truck, drive them right next door to, some of these properties that have been bought by foreign agencies adjacent to United States military posts, and simply launch a very short range missile from right next door, so to speak. Or you could launch a drone attack if you want to do that and take out critical weapon systems very rapidly. And who do you point your fingers at that point when it originates from 30 kilometers next door?
Yeah, there's as far as deliveries, launch platforms, there's a lot of opportunity there, a huge amount of opportunity, especially when you start thinking about if they do bury them in containers, which Matt's been talking about forever. I think that there's a lot of options there too. So that's why I say I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they would use that kind of an attack. I think that that's completely in their wheelhouse. I think that it would be a very, very, a very, very telling and I would say pointed demonstration.
Well, that would lead to the question, what is more terrifying? That a hypervelocity comes from, across the ocean, or, like that video that was passed around, a mothership with little killer drones is launched out of a container, inside the U.S.
Well, that's what I was talking about.
If we're looking at, the psychological effect, right? And if you do this in line with something else that's going on, and, the powers that be that decide that that's the same day they want to shut down, 15 independent banks and try and take over with digital currency. And they create a problem with the food shortages simultaneously. Now we have Armageddon.
Yeah, and that was what I was struggling with last night or the night before. When the discussion was, okay, how would they exploit the phones or I don't think that our stuff's going to blow up. So everybody that's listening to this, don't worry about your phone blowing up. But how are you going to exploit communications? And what is going to happen, right? So when what I call the stratification of enemy forces, meaning everybody all the way down to the lowest level jihad guy that's just going to shoot up a schoolyard and get neutralized, all the way up to their top level guys that are funded, coordinated, disciplined, and waiting for a target. And the problem is, what is the target? What is the targets? And then after that, then you can work your way back and go methods of action. But what are they going to do? And yeah, I think it's totally within not only the realm of possibility, but the actual current capability for an enemy force to import technology. And I don't know about the, you know, the top of a 20 TEU container opening up and all of a sudden these Clone Wars drone ships are coming out of it that have been in sleeper mode for 3 years. But it's certainly a possibility. But the reality is that we can't even stop fentanyl, human beings, and counterfeit products from coming into the United States. I doubt that we've made any effort in preventing subsystems that can be assembled into active weapon components over the last, you know, 5 years either. So I don't really spend a whole lot of time caring about what 40-foot container AK-47s and drones might be hiding in. I spend more time thinking about how are those AK-47s and drones going to be used? And really the big missing puzzle piece is, what is the target, right? What are the targets? But the assertion that it's going to be a multifaceted attack or a multi-pronged attack is, I would say, 100% certain it will be. You're not going to just do a little one trick pony and go, ah, ha, ha, we blew up a Capitol building, we killed a politician, we blew up an oil refinery, and not have anything to go through from that. And the discussion line that I was going down the other day is, if I wanted to, let's say, rob a bank, for example, that had a lot of money, and I knew when they were transferring it and the cash was out in the open and outside of the safe, and I did all my homework, I would call in a bomb threat at a hospital. I would have one of my guys just shoot a gun up in the air adjacent to where a schoolyard is, and then I would have somebody else cause a traffic accident at some key intersections to overwhelm the police and the first responders. And then at that, you know, half an hour before I needed to do what I needed to do, and then do. Now I can prosecute my target. I can get out clean. Everything's cool. I got no resistance. So just an example of planning, for example, do that at a national scale with these enhanced capabilities, and then do that in multiple locations within the United States. That's, don't worry about the first thing that blows up or the second thing that blows up. Worry about the things that aren't blowing up yet, because that third or fourth call for help, that's what the target is. Everything else is just a, you know, smoke screen.
Well, along those lines, somebody in the chat made a fairly adroit comment, and he said, Steve has often pointed out the high-tech stuff that we have that's not from aliens, but stuff we actually develop, things like the TRB-3, anti-grav systems, and other stuff like this. So Putin would probably be every bit as aware as any American president of any super high-tech, super secret weapon systems that we have. And other people acknowledge we most likely have certain forms of directed energy weapons. I think he would steer deliberately away from that kind of exchange. I think he would go back to the old days as a KGB operator, when they used to brag about one phone call causing an eruption of thousands into the streets, causing chaos and violence in Western Europe in protest. I think they would look to activate some of these immigrants, perhaps sleeper cells, other things like that. I think they would go with a more low-tech situation, simply because while Putin may be prodded, as Bruce was saying, by the neocons to respond in his own country, I don't think he really wants to get into a full-blown exchange with us that involves anything high-tech, and certainly not anything nuclear.
I'd agree with that. All right, we're coming up on, looks like about 10 minutes with everybody. I'm going to give this a few extra minutes for closing comments. And before I do that, I want to show everybody. So Vedic, this is for you. I'm going to share some of the slides, some of the patches that we were sharing today that I shared, you know, just some, these are pretty much just templates for a patch. But I figured, given the amount of stuff that we say on this show, this would be a really good, if it ever comes up. We'll see if it comes up anyway. But here's the challenge to the audience. So Vedic said last night we should do patches for folks who want to buy patches. Of course, it's not rendering right now. So the challenge is, if you can come up with a good patch and send it to us, then I'm all ears, because I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And this is just 10 minutes of, you know, throwing the logo and the mottos on a slide on a patch template. So that's just a swag. And then, of course, for those of you who want morale patches, there's these. So, like I said, lots of opportunities there. So, yeah, the coffee mugs, yeah. Uh-huh.
Wait, so, there's one that's blue and yellow. What's that about?
What do you mean, what's that about? That was for the Navy guys. So,
yeah, I was going to say it's got to be Navy.
Doug and Spud were saying we need Navy colors. So
yeah, I see we got jokes.
Yeah, so you can see I gave that the due amount of attention. So, but anyway, so I, the challenge is if you can come up with a good patch, I'm definitely open to it. I think there's a lot of yeah, I know, Mike. Blissfully unaware. I'll put that onto a patch tomorrow in a coffee mug. I'm currently fighting with Spreadshirt right now because they haven't paid anything out in 2-3 months. So anyway, I'll sort that out, and then I'll start putting some extra designs and products out there. But I think you guys could probably come up with just as good of a patch as we can. And that was 10 minutes worth of work to put all that together. So anyway, the challenge is there. And anyway, and the payoff, if you come up with a good patch, I will send you a coin. So, all right, let's do closing comments. Who wants to start? I think, Dave, you should start tonight.
No, I can't be first. I can't be first.
All right, then, Bruce, you start.
Oh, geez. Closing comments. I think the Cliff High podcast that just came out yesterday is worth people's time. It's pretty short. I do think he puts out pretty good information. When he focuses on what his system of software produces, kind of like Martin Armstrong, I think he puts out very useful information. And what he said in there, he said that the next 45 days that the, I forgot what he calls it. I think it's the response language is the terminology he uses, is very high, extremely high. And he had the same prediction come out shortly before the attack on Trump in July. And it was very close to when there was the attempt on Trump. So he has also predicted things like 9/11 in the past, supposedly. Anyway, so I think that if people wanted to get some more ideas on things, that's a good place to look. I think that the Martin Armstrong podcast a couple days ago with Greg Armstrong Hunter was excellent. And I noticed that Bracken reposted that. That was a really good one. But pretty much the same closing comments I had yesterday, you know, for everyone. Just keep working on things, looking at your weak spots. I think that the biggest thing we've got right now going on is the issue with the cell phones and everything that just happened in Lebanon. So we need to do something, I think, every one of us to mitigate our risk profile electronically. And that's that's all I got.
Spud?
Yeah. just to touch on the communication aspect, you know, of course, building your sphere of influence in your community. But there's a really couple good sources out there that I follow. S2 Underground, he's on YouTube, X, Telegram. He's on all the major platforms and does a really good job putting information out there, almost like it reminds me of World War II and the French underground when they used to, he's not using code, but just in the same method. It's just real brief. It's real quick, 5 or 10 minutes. But he also has a lot of really good information out there for those that are really intimidated with radios of any kind. He has a plan in place that you can actually download and follow. He's got a lot of tutorials out there to show you or walk you through. He does use the high frequencies. But again, the training's out there, and Brush Beater too. You know, his books are, they're priceless, especially the usage of the Baofeng radio and antennas and such. So I just want to encourage everybody to, you know, from a communication standpoint, if you're not sure, just check those guys out, or follow them and just see the reporting that they do. It's really good. And it's really basic. It just takes a few minutes, but check it out. But I did have a question. Not to take this back on the devices, but I've been thinking, have we ever considered or have we seen any data out there that supports that there was an external source that was causing these pagers to go off, if it was from a frequency level? Because we know that the pagers went off, but there were also other devices like potentially radios and solar panels and such. So I know we've never had a heavy discussion on that, but I figured I'd throw the question out there.
They haven't officially confirmed what it is, but all of the limited pictures that I've seen, it looks like the detonation was inside of the device, and specifically these radios. The one picture that I was looking at, a few more got posted where the detonation came from within the radio. So the radio has like the plastic outer case. Sometimes they have keypads on it, but the thing you talk into, you pull the battery pack off, then you have the aluminum plate, and the electronics are in between that sandwich, and then you put the battery on the back. And it indicated from the pictures that either the detonation happened from within the radio itself without respect to the battery, or the radio was adjacent to something that blew up. So I'm thinking maybe the radios didn't blow up. Maybe they were just on the same side of the belt as the pagers. But the, you know, how did the pagers, which we know were activated and detonated, how did they blow up? I don't think it was a battery. I'm going to stay with that. I don't think there was some kind of balloon or satellite overhead broad spectrum radio signal that caused batteries to detonate. But, you know, I mean, we won't know, but I'll put my prediction on the roulette wheel and see where it lands. I think that they did, Mossad or whomever, I believe that they did intercept a shipment, or they had, you know, had manufactured, which would be even more interesting to trace that back through the supply chain. But I believe that they very likely intercepted a shipment of these pagers, and they probably put out, you know, information nodes, right? Somebody who's saying, hey, you know, Ahmed, if we go to pagers, you know, we'll be more secure because they can't track those because they don't transmit, you know, so we should do that. And I have a source, and these things were already prepackaged. How they introduced them and fielded them, all of that is going to be great espionage, you know, bar discussion. But I believe that there was some type of stabilized primary explosive that was put into these devices, and I believe that it was activated with, you know, some page, and it only takes like a, you know, a very small amount of electricity to detonate that type of primary explosive. So that's my going thing is I think that they were packaged and then they were remotely detonated. And the fear of having a thermal runaway, usually the batteries that you see blow up, the lithium ion ones, it's because they're left on a unintelligent, you know, full charge. They go above their C level. They you know, basically fill up with too many electrons and they burst, and then they vent all of that, you know, or they overheat, or there's some type of charging circuit issue. But modern systems, even smaller ones now, but mainly big batteries, big, you know, LiPo 4 batteries, they have a battery management system that's integrated with the battery that will protect it. And then the devices that they're manufacturing for phones and things like that now, that battery management system is controlled at the circuit level to protect the battery. So I'm not saying you can't bypass that, or you can't do something intentionally or unintentionally to cause a battery to rupture. But when you do, it's not going to explode with the velocity of what that these charges did. That's very clearly some type of, I would say, it's like I said, a stabilized primary explosive, meaning an explosive that's designed to trigger another explosive, but stabilized so that it would not self detonate and transport. So that's a flag I'm flying. We'll see what the truth is.
If we get the truth, that's the question of the day. Okay, who's up next? Chip and Dave, Doug, you guys are both dead last. So
okay, I'll go.
sure, go ahead. You're last. Okay, I'll go.
Yeah. I'll just reiterate what Bruce said, that Martin Armstrong interview with Greg Hunter on USA Watchdog was really good. Supposedly Martin Armstrong's AI algorithm has been highly successful and accurate. And he presents some information on that interview that's pretty interesting. And it might get people to wake up about a couple things. That's all I'm going to say about that. Troop, you've had an impact on me with water and some other things. So the water's the good part. I went and got 3 55-gallon plastic drums. I've got water in those. One of them's got rainwater in it for flushing toilets until the sewer gets backed up. Just something, I feel safer about now, having water for my family, at least for a little while.
The rock.
Yeah. And then on the devices, I guess the company's called Apollo Gold. It's out of Taiwan. I don't know if this is legit or not, but I heard some chatter, seen a couple different things where that company might have outsourced some of its manufacturing, maybe somewhere in Europe. That might be a possibility as of where the people that detonated these devices got their hands on them and got involved with the manufacturing process. Not sure about that. I'm done.
Ralph said,
let me jump in there, Steve. I'm sorry. I'm going to make it quick. Dial soap, Matt Bracken brought it up, talking about gold guns and goats and all these things that we need at the end times. My closing comment is going to be, go ahead and get yourself some yellow Dial soap. It's very important, but don't use it to wash every day. My experience working with the homeless, which I have a lot of experience in, is I think that the fact that they don't shower every day has probably saved them from a lot of infections and a lot of wounds until they get wounded. And then they get infected very quickly because of the bacterial load that's on their skin. But I do think that your sweat, your sebum, your normal bacteria on the outside of your skin, when you're in a limited water situation, helps you more than it hurts you, even though you look stinky and kind of waxy and everything else. So I just wanted to close with, you want to maintain your personal hygiene and you want to clean yourself and make sure that you stay clean, but really limit the use of those antibacterial soaps and other things until you need them. So wash yourself, keep yourself clean like you normally would, the best you can. But then if you do get injured and you have a serious injury, then go ahead and break out that Dial soap, clean all the skin and the peri wound, in the outside area around the wound, and then follow the protocols. Like I use a lot of iodine to clean wounds. I think that's the best thing for shallow wounds is iodine for that and the outer skin. Never use alcohol in a wound. Use alcohol to clean things, not wounds. Use iodine to clean wounds, not things. But the Dial soap was a great put by Matt Bracken. I just wanted to end with, don't start out using that every day. You want to maintain a little bit of a bacterial load on your skin until you're injured, and then pull out the antibacterials to treat the wound. All right, out.
I'll back Trooper's comments on that, because I was trained by a plethora of Vietnam vets, and they backed the same thing. It was a combination of, number one, you didn't want to be smelt in the jungle. But number two, there was something about having that layer on top of you that protected you. As a closing comment, I want to put out a interesting story that surfaced, and that is, we've all been watching what's going on in Colorado with the Venezuelans taking over, and they've hit a couple of jewelry stores to finance their work. They've hit a couple of gun shops to arm themselves, and they hit two ranges that had ammo and weapons to enhance their stockpile. The interesting good news is they tried to do this in Baltimore, and the Baltimore gangs wiped them out.
Nice. So,
maybe we hire the Baltimore gangs and send them to Colorado.
Yeah, I have family in Detroit, and we've been talking about this, and I said, you guys are good. Don't worry about it.
Okay, let's get back to closing comments. We went kind of tangential there.
I'll jump in if you want, Steve.
Go ahead, Dave.
So I want to make two points. The first is, we talk quite a bit about establishing contact with our neighbors, line of sight, and so on, field of influence, and their
sphere of influence. Keep up.
And so I've got a situation personally in the community in which I live, where I'm told there's one or two former federal agents and one retired Secret Service agent. I have no idea what their perspective is politically. I don't even know exactly who they are. I'm gonna have to figure that out. But I've also got people immediately adjacent to me in our townhouse that are rabid anti-Trump fans, rabid liberals from a very blue state until they moved here. And my point is, if we don't know what's in front of us, and we don't know how the road to war is going to go, we all suspect something big is going to happen, but we could very well find ourselves in one of these situations where, much like communists encourage, people around you may be looking and more than happy to report you to the authorities and single you out as somebody that would be a troublemaker. So I would counsel, certainly make contact with people, be friendly, but be cautious in terms of expanding your sphere of influence, because you really need to understand what your neighbors are going to be like, how they're going to react, and whose side they're on. Because we don't live in homogenous neighborhoods. There's a lot of different perspectives. The second thing I want to talk about just briefly is state of mind. You know, again, we don't know what's coming down the road at us. Steve, you bring up this book, Deep Survival. I think one of the factors that's going to be critical for all of us is having a certain amount of mental flexibility and emotional agility, so to speak. That is to say, we've defined this paradigm of what we think is going to happen, something that ultimately ends up kinetic, some type of potential civil war or civil actions going on. We don't know. We also think that we've defined who the bad guys are, the quote-unquote deep state and their underlings and all of the corrupt individuals that support them. The truth is, we may be somewhat accurate, but we may be fairly inaccurate in certain regards as well. And I think Bruce's point about an October surprise or something coming down the road that none of us have envisioned is reason for us to keep, well, it's like stepping into the batter's box playing baseball. You don't want to grip the bat too tight. You don't want to stiffen up. You want to loosen up. You want to maintain that mental outlook of agility and the ability to maneuver if you need to, and to react in different ways than you expected to. I think we tend to get fairly, we get blinders on, so to speak, in our preparation. We've got to zoom out, take a look at bigger picture, and be creative in our threat assessment, because it almost certainly will not be exactly what we think it is.
I agree with that. Doug, you're up.
No, I do agree with Colonel Conrad on that. You know, when we're talking with neighbors, if you look, you know, some of you already know basically who you're going to be dealing with. whether they're, I guess you could say conservative or liberal, however you want to look at that. But the basic bottom line is, you know, you kind of want to be careful on how you approach that. Just, hey, you know, things are looking kind of sketchy. You know, and I was having this conversation with a couple of people about this when I was on my trip this past week. And the thing about that was everybody's saying, hey, you know, sometimes you got to watch who you're talking to. I was surrounded by a lot of military people this week. And even with them, you know, you could kind of tell who you could talk to. But then at the same time, some of these people, because of the education system now going on with some parts of the military, all of a sudden they start talking and, you know, you're kind of in shock. Like, oh, I shouldn't have said anything. So I think, you know, you're going to have discernment and kind of go into something in a neutral fashion until you can kind of figure out where they're at. I think it's going to be really important for people to understand it, you know, especially here, you know, in your neighborhoods, you know, locally.
I think Raul, you're up.
I just want to close by saying that it's the same message I keep saying, and that is get yourself prepared mentally, spiritually, physically. And if it's building a network nearby, build a network. If it's purchasing the equipment that you need for personal self-defense, take care of your family. Family first. Don't worry about the community if you've got to worry about your family. And spiritually, you got to get mentally ready for this. More and more indicators are saying something's going to happen. And if we're mentally prepared for it, I think you're going to do better just from that. Don't let the chaos sink in and turn your blood over.
Yeah, agree with that. I'll be back Monday with the situation report. And then Wednesday be a one-on-one. I'm trying to get Joel Skolson back. I'm still waiting for comms with him. I'm going to do Mike Ferris is working on an interview between me with me and Alex Craner. So stand by for that. And then we're on the event horizon. So use your stuff, do stuff. Now's the time to do. And as things develop, stay out of the national space, stay out of the emotional space. We'll see you on Monday night. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
Hoorah.
Hoorah.